Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. Covered or uncovered? The question hangs over Rami, the new Hulu series of the same name. Rami is a single, straight, 30-year-old Muslim Egyptian-American millennial. What kind of woman does he want to date? Take this scene of the fictional Rami Hassan with his mother.
Rami, do you want to stay alone forever?
Mom, you can't just walk up to a Muslim girl and, like, start spitting game or something. Like, what am I supposed to say? Like, hey, can I get your father's number?
Yes, why not?
Identity and faith get tested by modern America and by his own family. Serious stuff wrapped in wry humor by the show's creator, the stand-up comedian Rami Youssef. This hour on Point, my conversation with Rami Youssef. Join us. What questions do you have about humor and millennials, humor and Muslims, humor and sex? Where do you draw the lines? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. As I've said, with us in the studio today here in New York City is Rami Youssef. He's a stand-up comedian and actor starring in the aforementioned series premiering today on Hulu called Rami. Rami, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the show. That's a big coup, no?
It's really kind of surreal, you know. I feel like I've always wanted, since I was a kid, I wanted to have a show on an app. So it's really...
Yes, before there were such things as smartphones, before there were apps, you said someday...
I was like, someday.
There's going to be this thing. I don't know what it means.
Yeah. My show will be on an app.
So we mentioned in the intro the idea of covered or uncovered. I want to give listeners a feel who may not be as familiar with Muslim faith and practices about what this means. On the show, the character Rami had never dated a Muslim woman, but one day at work, he finds himself swiping on a dating app specifically for Muslims. He's with his best friend, Steve, who notices that Rami is passing by all of the women with headscarves, and Steve accuses Rami of being a racist.
Headscarf's not a race. It's something that people wear.
Oh, I love when they're all covered from their head to their toe like that. You know, that mystery is sexy.
That's disgusting.
Have you ever dated a Muslim girl?
No, I haven't, and that's why I'm doing this. I'm trying to meet someone, you know, different.
Because you're racist.
How is that racist, dude? Islam is not a race. It's something you believe in.
So that's why you were doing that, or your character was in the show. Why are you doing this? What are you trying to do with the show, Rami?
I think we're trying to kind of peel back the headlines that people know and look at what we actually deal with on a human level. Really, for me, the show is about humanizing and complicating the conversation and around what it might be to be an Arab Muslim. And this show is, you know, very limited in scope, right? It's like we're dealing with an Arab Muslim family in Jersey. We don't get into all of the nuances, but the point is to just complicate the way that you think about it and maybe create different reference points for when you hear the word Muslim or when you think about a mosque.
So I love that because so many people say, well, you know, we want to clarify things. We want to simplify things. We want to strip them down and make it clear. Like, that is not you.
I don't know how to do that. I'm trying to get clarity myself. So I don't, you know, I'm not here to teach people about Muslims. Again, most Muslims in America are actually black, you know. I mean, they go through things that I have never been through that I can't even imagine. And so this is not the average Muslim family. This is a guy called Rami. That's why we called the show Rami. It wasn't because I wanted, you know, my name on billboards or something. It was more so to be like, this is really all I can claim to talk about. And but hopefully, you know, people see a little bit of their family and mine.
Well, I mean, it's hard not to. I mean, these are very... these are very intimate and personal moments you depict. You depict people at dinner. You depict people talking about dates. You depict people at work. And they're people.
Yeah.
You know, they're people. When you talk about complicating things, just unpack that a little bit. What do you mean?
Well, I think that a lot of what happens with the conversation around trying to show a family like this for maybe, quote unquote, the first time, you know, I mean, but there's not really – I'm not really that into the idea of firsts. I think we can get really caught up in it. I think obviously we're trying to open certain doors and do all of that. But the kind of weight that gets put on stories like this is this idea that, like you said, we can clarify or we can almost do like a PR job on Islam, you know, and that kind of thing to me is very dangerous because it's there's no success rate there. Like, you can't do it because, again, the scope is so large. But the other thing is, to me, it's more interesting to kind of show people at their faults and kind of showing people messy because we're all messy. So if I'm going to show you this family and be like, well, look, you know, Muslim families also care about their kids and they also, you know, feel love and all that. Everyone's kind of like, yeah, what are you hiding? But if I lead with, no, we have problems and they're probably the same ones you have, it's more exciting. And so we don't really shy away from that stuff. I think we try to show the humanity of every character and also show, you know, the ways in which they're ignorant and the ways in which they're messy, particularly my character. I mean, you know, I was always very interested not only in the way that we can stereotype others, but the way we stereotype ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of, you know, if you watch the show, you kind of see my character bump into that, you know, his own assumptions gone wrong. So he has a racist uncle that is like, you know, very clearly everything, you know, that you can imagine, homophobic, anti-Semitic, racist, sexist, all those things. He thinks he's a lot better than him. But then you kind of see, oh, wait, Rami also, you know, has his own problems. And maybe he got them from him, but it's his job to work through them.
Your sister on the show, played by May Kalamaui, has a meal out of him. I mean, she just takes him apart in one of the scenes, right, at talking about him at the dinner table.
Yeah.
You know, I assume these are kind of rhythms and textures. You know, you call the show, I guess, emotionally autobiographical, right?
Right.
I assume that these are things that you're kind of picking up on cadences that you've experienced around you.
Sure. I mean, when I say emotionally autobiographical, it's the reason I say that is because my family can watch this show and they're like, oh, okay, that's not us. Because it really is different, you know, and the character, you know, Rami is a lot different than me. I do stand up. That was a quick decision of this guy's not going to do comedy. I don't think that
you're not going to replicate Seinfeld 20 years later or something.
No. And I also don't think, like, you know, people in America relate to that. I don't think everyone's like, whoa, what's going to happen at that open mic? You know, I don't really think that's that exciting. But I think that it was important to get those cadences and those rhythms that are very real. I mean, we switch from Arabic to English for no real reason. Uh-huh. We talk in a certain way.
It kind of toggles very kind of naturally, right?
Totally. You know, and those were the things I really wanted to replicate, you know, and those dynamics within a family, again, I think are very real for any family. So it's like, you know, my sister going at my uncle, that's, you know, any Thanksgiving in America post-Trump. You know, I mean, like, just put an uncle and put, you know, I guess millennial, for lack of a better term, in a room and see what happens, you know, over some food. And so that's the kind of stuff that we put all the shading that is very unique to us. You know, it's our music, it's our meals on the table, but the energy and the conversations that are going back and forth, I think, could happen, you know, in any family.
And it's not that your mom is actually giving your dad grief about his hairline or something like that.
Well, that's probably real.
I want to take a call now from Centerville, Massachusetts. Avi, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks for letting me participate in the conversation today. I wanted to offer that I was recently sent a whole list of Muslim jokes from a neighbor. And they were jokes that were being forwarded from a very well-known professional comedian. And I had a very bad reaction to it for two reasons. One is, I think people should be mindful of who's telling the joke and to which audience. I mean, I think if you're a member of a particular tribe, you're granted a little bit of leeway because, in a sense, you're poking it fun at yourself. But if you're outside that particular group, then the rules change a little bit. The other thing that I wanted to note about that list of Muslim jokes that was sent to me was they broke the cardinal rule of humor, which is they weren't funny, you know, and the bar for funny should be taken seriously. You know,
yeah.
I think a lot of people love to tell jokes which are scatological in nature or in the bathroom, and, you know, they think it's great. You know,
doesn't do it for you. Avi, I want to ask you a quick question. Are you inside the group or not in this case? Or you're not yourself Muslim, is that correct?
No, I'm Jewish. But mm-hmm. My response to my neighbor was, well, suppose you put a skull cap on that person and you make it the Pope or you make it a rabbi, you know, how do these jokes change, you know, and what's the impact of them? And, you know, and one of the jokes had to do with the recent congresswoman who, you know, who wears a hijab. And to say it was in poor taste, maybe that's my opinion, but none of them were funny. And this was a list of jokes forwarded from a person whom everybody would know, who makes the rounds as a professional comedian for quite some time.
Well, Avi, thanks for sharing your thoughts and your experience. I want to turn to Rami Youssef, who is a professional comedian, who does do stand-up, and who is, I assume you're trying to navigate the line yourself, try to figure out, okay, we're playing here to, our, you know, presumably, well, I don't know. You know, Chuck Jones, the guy who did, you know, Looney Tunes, was always asked, are you making Bugs Bunny for kids? Are you making them for adults? And he'd say, you're getting it all wrong. We're making it for us.
Yes.
Like, in your show, you're probably trying to reach for Hulu as broad an audience as possible while at the same time being true to amusing the heck out of yourselves.
Yeah, well, I think that's very true. You know, I mean, I made the show that I wanted to see. And also to kind of, you know, in reference to this call, I mean, it was mentioned, Avi just said it broke the cardinal rule of humor, which is to be funny. Most comedy does break that rule. Professional comedian is a very low bar.
Uh-huh.
Most of it sucks.
Uh-huh.
It's really bad. I have a hard time watching most of it. It is a lot of people making fun of other people, which to me is just not that funny. Like, I think you can say whatever you want to say, but you have to make it personal. You have to make it about yourself. And so most comedy kind of falls short of feeling personal. It's just kind of using the tension that's out there and then continuing to attack people. And so it's pretty bad on the most part. And yeah.
So we're discussing the new comedic series on Hulu about a millennial Egyptian-American man, an observant Muslim who's trying to navigate his faith, family, dating, and much more. You can join our conversations. What questions do you have for the comedian Rami Youssef? We'll be talking about his humor, his show, and his stand-up. What main ingredients make up a quality comedy for you? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com. Code POD.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. I'm joined today by Rami Youssef, the creator and star of a new comedic series on Hulu about Muslim American identity in the modern world. You can join our conversation. Where do you find depictions of Muslims in movie or TV shows that you enjoy or admire? What are some of your favorite TV shows that have been starred comedians? Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook and On Point Radio. With me here in studio in New York, Rami Youssef, comedian and star of a new series premiering today on Hulu, aptly titled Rami. I wanted to ask where you took inspiration from for the kind of the pace and the approach that you took in creating this show.
I think we probably referenced movies more than television. I would say The Graduate, above anything else. Yeah, I mean, I remember the first time I watched The Graduate, and you know, he's in the hotel, and he goes to the closet and he tries to take the hanger off, but he doesn't know that like those types of hangers can't get off those racks in a hotel. And right. I was like, oh man, not only has this guy never had sex, like he's never even been in a hotel. Like, and he's so out of his element. And I remember seeing that and feeling this connection to that, you know, that real fish out of water. You know, it's like out of water and then again out of water. And so really that's a lot of what we do with my character, where he's not really ever able to fit in where he's in because of his anxieties, because of his, you know, second doubting, because of his, you know, soul searching and all of those things. And so we really looked at wanting to create a show that had a pace that could reveal that.
It struck me that there were kind of things that I heard echoes of, but I'm not sure that that's fair. Like I thought that there were things about Atlanta that kind of felt a little bit like there was a rhythm there where you didn't have to play everything like Friends for a joke every, you know, 25 mm-hmm. seconds, mm-hmm. right? Or a straight punchline. I felt like the movie Garden State a little bit,
uh-huh.
you know, a little bit with Zach. I don't know if there's anything there, but there were things where I was just like, you're not, it's very funny,
yeah.
but you're not trying to pace it for that, where we're having to be reminded how funny it is all the time.
Yeah, we're not pacing for hard jokes. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people, when they look at the TV landscape, anything that isn't pacing for jokes is immediately going to be thrown into the same category. So it's like this show happens and then people are like, oh, Master of None, Atlanta, Louie, all those things, which is, I mean, we're probably, you know, spiritual cousins or something with those shows, but it almost kind of speaks more to how much of TV comedy is mind-bendingly fast-paced and edited. And so anything that isn't that is going to be thrown into the same category and called the same,
right.
But it's really not. I mean, I think that we go for the joke in a way that a lot of other dramedies don't. A lot of them sit in the abstract or the weird or the high concept. For me, it was really important to be like, no, we have to be funny. Like, that is our job, and I don't want to lose track of that. But also, the joke doesn't have to come every 10 seconds in the way that we're treated with television. You know, I mean, if you want really quick jokes, I wouldn't even watch TV. I would just go on Twitter and like look at memes because they're amazing. No, the people doing memes there should be some sort of Emmys for memes because they are so funny. Like, I genuinely laugh at them, and I will never, you know, accomplish that on a TV show, and I shouldn't even try.
And that's okay.
Oh my God, it's different formats.
So a lot of the early episodes have to do with angst of Rami, of his family, about relationships with women. Is he able to really connect, and does he want to connect with the woman who's not Muslim? Does he, you know, what does he want to do? He decides to meet some Muslim women. Here's what we'd call, I guess, a setup fail. Rami agrees to meet with Ahmed's cousin, who's impressed with him. Ahmed's a friend of his. This cousin is impressed with Rami until she finds out that he lacks a particular quality that she requires for a husband.
How much of the Quran do you have memorized? How many surahs?
You know, the classics.
And beyond those, you do read Arabic, right?
I read the Quran in English.
I want my kids to read Arabic.
Totally, no, and I think they should. I mean, I think that you could, you know, got to teach the kids Arabic, and I actually feel like when I have kids, I'll take the class with them. So this way, it's like a bonding thing, like me and them, and then they're like, wow, Dad's still learning too. I think it's a valuable lesson.
The adult brain stops developing at 25. So it's much harder to learn languages. It'll never stick.
You're kind of done there.
Yeah, man. It'll never
There's
stick.
Nowhere to go.
It'll never stick. Neuroplasticity, man.
Neuroplasticity. Yeah. So is Rami there trying to dig himself out of a hole, or does he actually kind of halfway believe what he's saying?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, he has this ideal version of himself where, you know, he's a slacker with high principles. And so he's like, well, no, I could learn it later. And as he's trying to convince her and convince himself, she pretty much knows that that's not true. So he's faced with reality a little bit.
We've got a call now from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. Mikey is calling in. Mikey, what are your thoughts for Rami?
I think you're great, man. I'm digging everything you're talking about, being Lebanese. Well, I'm Lebanese, you're Egyptian, and having that oddness, it's, you know, I think it's cool that Arabs and Muslims are getting to be known in America more and not just some oddity. I think it's funny. And what you said about how comedy is today, I agree completely, man. It's thrown in their lap. It's not really hard. You know what I mean? To me, it seems like Saturday Night Live has been written by an eighth grader. There's more complexity at laughing at yourself than it is at others. And I think that's how true comedy is. And
hey, Mikey, are there things that you've either heard on the show today or that you've heard in Rami's past work that speak to kind of your experiences, your family life, or how you've experienced things?
Yeah, especially with meeting girls, because my mother's not Lebanese, my father is, so I'm still considered Lebanese, but wanting your family, wanting you to meet a Lebanese girl is, man, that's rough. It is. And then when you meet one, you got another test to take, and it's hard. It's not easy. It's not comfortable. So I've given up, but I like it. I like what he's doing. I think it's great, man. And you're absolutely right about comedy, how it is today. You just said it. Memes are funnier than a lot of stand up. So, hey, good luck, man. And, keep it up the good work, bro. It's great.
Thanks for your call, Mikey, and keep hope alive, as they say.
Yeah, keep hope alive.
So you do. There's a really funny bit that appears in the show, and it's a moment between Rami and a young woman that he's gone on a very promising first date with. And then in watching some of your clips this week, I saw that you had actually done a version of it in your stand-up. In January 2017, newly elected President Trump signed an executive order. He's banning Muslims from a bunch of countries from entering the U.S., a distressing day for many. But as you relate it, when you made your debut on CBS's Late Show with Stephen Colbert, the day was different, memorable in a different way for you. Let's hear how you put it.
I have family that doesn't have citizenship. You know, I want to see them again. But personally, I had a really good day. That day, I got cast in a Taco Bell commercial. I'm watching TV and this guy's like, this is a terrible day for all Muslims. I'm like, well, not all Muslims.
All right, where did that bit come from?
It came from shooting a Taco Bell commercial the day that the Muslim ban was happening. It was very bizarre. I was truly like, I'm on set and I'm getting these, you know, texts from everyone on my WhatsApp group kind of being like, what's happening? What's going on? And I'm on set with a fried chicken taco, and I'm like holding it in my hand, and I'm like, this taco would kill more people than any refugee could. Like, this is dangerous. This taco is dangerous. Not Muslims coming in.
Alone.
Oh, this cholesterol threat alone is way higher than anything we're dealing with on a terrorism level. And so it was just surreal, and it's like kind of those surreal things, and it's that thing you feel when you are really connected to where your family is and where they come from. You know, it's like knowing I have all this family that isn't in the country, and also feeling like, yeah, maybe I'm not feeling that in the same way they are, and so I feel this pain, but I'm also, this kind of like a good thing is happening to me. And at the time, I had a roommate who was living with me, and you know, who was in one of the countries that was on the list, and he had went to travel to visit his family, and then he was there, and he like didn't know what was going on, if he was going to be able to get back, and I was really upset, you know. And then I was also like, oh man, his PlayStation's here, you know. And so it's like you're dealing with this like dichotomy of these feelings, you know. It's like, oh, I mean, I might have just, you know, gone up a PlayStation, and that's the stuff that I love to explore, because I don't want to be depressed, and I don't want to be upset about all of this, because it does really hit on an emotional level. But it I think it's important to, you know, because it's not making fun of it. Again, it's kind of like placing yourself in the situation. And so I think you can really go at almost anything, but where do you sit in it? You know, the humor I don't really gravitate towards is when someone kind of has nothing to do with the topic and they're just like attacking. I think as introspective as it can be, is what's really exciting. And so it's trying to find that in these headlines that kind of feel really devastating.
How has your humor changed in the time of Trump? It seems to me in just a couple short years, obviously, since 9/11, the question of the role that Muslims play in American life, Muslim Americans, it's been coming to sharp focus. And at the same time, it seems as though the stakes have been very much heightened since the president started running for office. How has that affected, or how much has that affected your humor and how you approach it?
I don't know if it's affected me as much as it's affected audiences. I think audiences are kind of we had this illusion under Obama that everything was okay. And so you'd kind of try and talk about how it wasn't, and people would be like, what are you talking about? Stop. And then now I think it's pretty clear that we're in a place that we need to reflect. And so I find to be able to dive into more things than I used to. And the things I dive into aren't Trump related. I mean, I just made a 10 episode series, you know, over 5 hours of content. And we talk about him once. You know, this isn't, I don't need him, you know, and talking about him and making fun of him is kind of ineffective. I mean, his State of the Union is in the top five comedy specials every year that he does one. So he's funnier than any joke you could make about him. So there's no point to even get into that, really. But it's changed the climate of where the material sits. And people are more open to having, I think, deeper conversations.
Going back to the Colbert appearance for a moment, that was in 2017, I think. You do stand up on Colbert. You were back this week to talk about your show, but you do stand up on Colbert. And I think you said that that was a pretty important moment, which said to me, well, gosh, you know, it reminds me of the Johnny Carson days where being called over to sit by the Carson was like being kissed by the emperor or something. What did appearing on Colbert do for you?
It was the first time I'd ever done stand-up on a national platform, and so it was really exciting to connect with so many people all over the world. You know, with a 5-minute clip, I was hearing from people in so many different countries and so many different parts of the U.S. just being like, can you come here? Can you come here? You know, I want to hear you talk, you know, on all this. And I'm like, wow, that was just from 5 minutes of a slice of my life. And it, you know, it's one of those things that emotionally, you're like, okay, cool. Like, people are open to talking about this conversation and want to expand this conversation. And the timing of that happened right around the time as we were developing the show too. And so it was really exciting. It was cool.
The show, you know, there are ways in which you find humor in a lot of different elements. Some of them universal. Some of them there's one where you seemingly don't want to wait online to rinse your feet right before a prayer. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of go downstairs to the mosque basement and you like dab a little water on your socks, you know, and this guy calls you out. Mm-hmm. Remind me who it is, who the other character is.
Yeah, we just call him the old Hajj. He's every mosque has this dude who, you know, is there to make sure the rules are being kept. He doesn't have an official job or anything. He just kind of lingers around reading the Quran. Yeah, he was on it. Yeah.
And so he's rebuking you for insufficient cleaning between your toes and all these things. And there's humor in other ways too. There's a scene in which Rami is talking to his friends Mo and Ahmed, and he's insisting that during Ramadan this year he's going to refrain from, let's just say, certain activities.
Last time I was half in, half out. This Ramadan, no women. I'm not gonna watch porn. I'm just gonna be focused.
No porn. This guy says no porn.
It's gonna be tough.
No way.
What do you mean I'm gonna?
You are not gonna. I give it 24
hours. What do
you mean me? Impossible. You won't make it a day.
You don't watch porn?
Uh-uh. I actually don't. It's gross, man.
From the sacred to the profane, all, you know, all in what you're calling a dramedy, right?
Right.
So how far is transgressive for this show? What boundaries are you not willing to go past?
I never want to make fun of the religion. I never want to make fun of what people are trying to achieve and do. Because I think that, you know, religion gets made fun of a bunch and it's justified. Religious culture, even like the industry of religion is pretty dangerous. And so all of it is very justified. But for me, in my work, I'm really, again, more interested in myself within those rules and myself within the culture, because I really respect the culture. I respect the rules. I think that, you know, there's something really beautiful there of like trying to live to your higher self. And that's kind of what this show is more interested in discussing. And so the line would be to cross that, you know, to go into pointing the finger at anyone other than the character we're talking about. It should all be introspective. And so that is actually a very clear line. You can feel it. You know, you can feel it when you're writing. You can feel it when you're performing it, where it's like, nah, I'm not going to go there. It's just it's not enough about me.
There's a early on, he's dating a non-Muslim woman, and she becomes very agitated that she realizes Rami doesn't drink as an observant Muslim, and she basically sends him off. She dismisses him as a boyfriend, and she says, it's not because you won't drink when I'm drinking; it's because you deceive me about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's right in that scene?
She is. I think I do. I mean, I think that, you know, the climate in which he sits makes it hard for him to tell the truth, but he lied, you know, he deceived. I mean, you know, he, you know, never really told her that he didn't drink, but was around. And so I think that, again, that's a really good example of, I don't want to protect my character. I want to call him out. And I think that in that situation, they both have a point. But you know, when she says, really what I'm upset about is that you lied, it's kind of like, yeah, she's right.
A problem any young man could have in a relationship. We're discussing a new series on Hulu that traces the life of a Muslim American man, a millennial, eager to engage with the modern world and just as eager to remain true to his faith. You can join our conversation. What questions do you have for Rami Youssef? What do you look for in television comedies? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. We're discussing a new series premiering today on Hulu about a Muslim American millennial and his desire to reconcile the demands of his religion with the temptations of modern society. You can join the conversation. How much of a refuge does comedy offer in an often heartless world? What questions do you have for Rami Youssef about his humor or his show? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me, Rami Youssef, the star of the new comedic or dramedy, shall we say, series on Hulu, aptly titled Rami. Before the break, you were saying that you wanted to make sure that you weren't poking fun at the religion itself. Mm-hmm. You know, you read about creative figures on shows that have a real vision for what they want to do. And I know you work with a team to do this. And you're always hearing, well, they have notes. Studios have notes. People push us, you know, high producers push us to go in a certain direction or stretch it just a little bit, maybe make it a little bit more amenable to a larger audience, whatever. What kinds of tensions did that create for you as you sought to develop this, whether at Hulu or even before then?
You know, so much of making this show is based on my stand-up. I mean, I think when we pitched it, we had like a half-hour tape of me kind of doing a lot of the bits that are predominantly the backbone of the pilot. And throughout the series, pretty much every episode has stand-up of mine, whether it's dialogue or whether in the overarching kind of umbrella premise of the episode. And that was a really great place to draw from. I mean, I don't think, like, people don't really know me as a stand-up because I, again, the only thing I have public was that Colbert clip from 2 years ago. But within, when we were pitching, people had seen me, you know, in LA and knew kind of what I was talking about. And so I think going in with that voice already was very helpful for us in establishing the tone and establishing in what we were going to be talking about. And I think a lot of our, you know, the things that we would get from the, you know, the network were really more about tone. It was really more of us wrestling with that kind of thing. But I really felt like I got to express what I wanted to say. Like, there's nothing in my show that I'm like, well, the network made me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not, I don't really have that excuse. I mean, we really, we got to make the show that we wanted to make. But that being said, I think that there is certain things that you do kind of feel like you have to set up or do in television. You know, you kind of got to get it started, and you gotta, you know, exposition is no one's favorite thing, and so we really always tried to find the most creative ways to do that. But you know, you're dealing with the rules of storytelling on a level too, you know.
So tell me an example of something where it's like, you know, in a perfect world I wouldn't have to do this, but this makes sense for the logic it dictates what television requires.
Well, I think there's just like certain things that you gotta say. You know, it's not like I love the like a line where I'm like, well, as a Muslim, or I'm a Muslim. You know, it's like there's a lot of stuff you kind of have to state, you know, where it's like, ah, I wish people just knew me and like we could just get into it. You know, I wish we could just get to, you know, like you just have to set certain things up at a certain point. I'm very proud of our exposition on this show. I think it is, in terms of exposition, way less boring than a lot of exposition tends to be. And then it's really exciting when we get to the meat.
So I want to take a couple calls for you. Omar is calling from Sherbrooke, Quebec. Omar, thanks for joining us. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, thanks. Do you hear me well?
Yes, we do, Omar. We're interested in your thoughts.
Okay, thanks. I wasn't really planning to call, but when he talked about the girl that was upset because he deceived her about being observant, I really it hit a chord for me, because the same situation happened for me, you know. Mm. I was planning to explain a little more. I was on mm-hmm. Tinder, and I was planning to meet some girls, but the girl, she was really on point. Like, she was a white girl, you know, white Quebecer, and she said like, are you an observant Muslim? I was like, no, not really, because for me, I guess Rami Youssef will confirm. For me, I wasn't praying every day, so I wasn't really an observant. But she was like, no. I have another question. Do you eat pork? I was like, no. Do you drink alcohol? I was like, not really. Do you do Ramadan? I was like, yes. She said, well, you're an observant. You just don't know it.
And she was yeah, man, that sounds observant to me, I got to say. You sound pretty observant.
Yeah, exactly. So she knew me really more. Like, I wasn't having the same definition, because I grew up in Algeria when I came here. So I was bringing my own definition from back home. But the definition here is, I guess, it's different. So she allowed me to change my own definition for myself, you know? Mm. So,
well, thank you.
Point, I was
trying, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have a second point. Like, mm-hmm. I really didn't know you, sir, but I really like you very much. I kind of know Stephen Colbert, but I guess I missed the 5 minutes that you were on the show. But because of the radio show of today, I will subscribe to Hulu, and I will watch wow. your series. So don't underestimate radio shows, because it allowed me to know you. And second point, yeah, keep making fun of Muslims and of ourselves. It just makes us more human, you know, because yeah. The big discrimination that's happening nowadays in the Western world is making Muslims look like aliens. So the more you make fun of us, of everyday situations, the more people will know that we're human, you know, they will identify themselves with us. So it doesn't really serve us anything to make fun of Donald Trump or of rednecks. Just make fun of ourselves, and this will humanize us more. So I really, really thank you for being an example, you know.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for the call, Omar. I thought initially he was looking to you for sort of like a judicial ruling, and here it is. He's giving you sort of counsel on what you're doing next.
Well, that was really great. I'm really glad Omar called, because he said a couple things that really stick out to me. The idea that he wouldn't think he's, you know, an observant Muslim because he doesn't pray every day or all the time. And that's something that I would struggle with all the time. You know, I try to pray every day. It's like every day I'm like, okay, I'm trying to pray five times a day. And some days I do it. Those are the days I feel like I'm most in line with myself. And some days I don't and I fail. But it's like we're constantly trying, you know, and we're constantly, and it's in our heart. And so for him to be like, okay, I fast Ramadan and I do this, but I don't do that. And there's this notion that that means you're out. You know, if you don't do everything perfect, then you're done. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think that's a really dangerous narrative because, you know, as humans, we're imperfect. Any faith says that you're imperfect. And so we're trying. And I think just the attempt of having that feeling in your heart and trying means you're in. You know, maybe you're not as in as anyone else, or maybe like, okay, sure, you have things to work on, but, you know, we all do. And so I think that's a lot of the space that I've been trying to create with this show, where it's like you don't have to erase where you come from just because you're not playing a perfect score game, you know, and I think that we live in these extremes where we're like, I'm either just doing everything right and I memorize the Quran, or that's it, I'm done, I have nothing to do with it. And so the way we stereotype ourselves is a lot of what the show is about. And to his, you know, second and third point, it's like that's also why the humor comes inward, right? We don't need to go and make fun of other people. It's like that is the most humanizing thing, is to be vulnerable and to kind of show how we're failing to, you know, hold up to our ideals.
I want to take another call from Sevierville, Tennessee. Brent is on the air. Brent, join us. Tell us what your thoughts are here.
Hi, thanks for having me. I am really appreciative of anything that kind of, just like Omar was saying earlier, just kind of normalizes the whole conversation concerning not only just Muslims, but also millennials. I find that today's cultural climate, many people that I talk to, they're so afraid or just that they write off these two separate categories, like millennials have nothing to contribute, or they're lazy, or you know, such as these, and then being Muslim also, I am not particularly Muslim, but I could see that you know, combining those two things is, you know, a recipe for even more of this sort of discriminatory or like, I guess, demonizing atmosphere. So I appreciate so much when I see things like the show Rami, where it's bringing to the forefront a conversation that lets people see these types of cultures and these types of individuals in a different way that maybe they shouldn't be written off or they shouldn't be feared or demonized in this way.
Oh, thank you for that call, Brent. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
I've got to say, I think we've got a new subcategory of particularly Muslim.
He said he's not particularly Muslim, which I really like that. Yeah,
you're particularly Muslim, like, but yeah. not as formally.
You know, Brent's like, yeah, you know, I have hummus every couple weeks, so I'm a little bit.
I'm in. So I want to talk a little bit about your family. You're also from New Jersey, like your character on the show. On the other hand, your father had a somewhat different job. He came to this country as an immigrant and then rose to – tell folks what job your father had.
Oh, yeah. I talked about it on Colbert. I mean, you know, my dad was a manager of food and beverage at the Plaza Hotel. And, you know, the owner at the time was Donald Trump. And so it was it's an interesting, you know, element of kind of knowing, you know, when you hear about his businesses and you hear about, you know, this being a very rich man and all of that, and then you see the way he treats people, and I'm like, oh wait, but like my dad like ran one of your biggest properties. It was like a huge part of it, you know, and our family was, you know, a huge part of that. And the crazy thing is, my dad had good experiences with him. It wasn't even like, you know, it was like, you know, it was good. And so it's really
he had, prior to all this stuff, yeah, he had warm memories of working for Donald Trump.
We're talking about the 90s. Yeah. I mean, it was, yeah, you know, I mean, I think just as an employee, I mean, not that Donald wasn't doing crazy in the 90s, but, you know, it's just, it was a different thing.
So what is it like to see Trump in this realm, having seen him as a young boy, as sort of a friendly figure with your father?
I mean, yeah, it's obviously shocking, you know, and there's a, you know, there's just a disconnect from humanity. It's like, it's just very clear where you're watching somebody that is not operating from anything other than ego. There's no human connection in what's going on. I think even the people who support him are pretty clear on that too. I don't think they know what he's going to do any day. I think they kind of like the unpredictability of it maybe, you know, I mean, but yeah, it's just on a very not human level. You know, that's it's very much just feeding into seeding into the ego, you know, and so you're just seeing someone kind of spiral that way.
So when you see him, and I realize that your show is not a political show and your humor is not particularly political in a sense, but when you see him do things like go after Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and invoke her faith in doing that, how do you process that?
It's really dangerous. I mean, it's, you know, she's now vulnerable to violence, like genuine violence. And I think that these things are, they're very connected, you know, the rhetoric versus actions. I mean, if you look at the manifesto from whatever his name is from, you know, Christchurch, if you look at, you know, the way that, you know, there's been militarized violence around the rhetoric that he does, it makes me really worried for her, you know, and it makes me, you know, really just confused at how our system of a government that's supposed to have checks and balances is failing to protect not only citizens, but even its own member of government is shocking.
It's a complicated thing for sure. The president's aides, for the record, would say that they you know have disavowed violence, but you know certainly Congresswoman Omar has said that she's said that there was a spike in death threats after the president's tweets, and one of the people arrested cited some of the president's rhetoric.
The vibe is very violent. So I mean, the dude's posting Game of Thrones memes. That's a violent show.
That is a violent
show. It's a very violent show.
That is a violent show. One of the things that I find striking about your series is the extent to which you build over the course of this first season. Maybe there'll be more. We don't know, or at least I don't know. Do you know?
I don't know. I hope
so. Is the extent to which you make sure to make your sister's character of your sister, the character of your mother, individual people with their own arcs, their own experiences. And we hear the frustration of Rami's sister, Dina, in this scene. She's frustrated with your parents for allowing Rami to leave the house without informing them of his plans because she's never given that liberty. And she doesn't hold back in expressing her displeasure.
Does anyone even care where Rami goes? You guys never ask him where he is.
He just told me he's going out.
That's what I just said.
He literally gave you no information.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Love you, Mom.
Love you, Habibi. What time are you coming back?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm leaving.
Okay, Dina. Just don't be late.
Yeah, Mama Habibti, please, text me when you get there.
Okay, Mom.
Okay? Stand this way. Please, soft on the driving. Careful with the brakes.
Okay, Mom.
Why'd you decide to really let these characters kind of breathe on their own in subsequent episodes of the season?
I just knew it was what I was interested in exploring. I knew it was what people wanted to see, and I knew that it was important. So, you know, I think you want to represent characters. It's not just a couple of lines in a scene. I think it is them having their own moments, you know, where they can be in silence, but the camera's still with them, you know, where they can actually explore something that's on their mind, a goal, a problem, and you really need time to do that. And so, you know, it's a first season show with a character called Rami, but it just felt a lot more interesting to me to delve off that character and get into the people in his lives, because it's still in a roundabout way about him, and it informs a lot of what he's doing.
There's, I think, just before we go, there's a scene where your mom's character decides to be a Lyft driver and thinks she has a moment with one of her passengers.
Yeah, I mean, that whole episode is so much about this loneliness that I think any mom can feel when, you know, her kids grow older and she's in a different place, in a different spot. And especially then you add the immigrant element and you're really seeing somebody who was probably looking at the country through the context of raising their children. And now that they're not doing that, they're seeing the place that they didn't really grow up in for the first time, you know, with a lot more freedom and time on their hands. And how does that affect them?
You've been hearing the voice of Rami Youssef, the comedian and star of the new Hulu series, Rami. So glad you joined us today.
Yeah, thank you.
You continue our conversation, get the On Point podcast, our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point's produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonas, Allison Poli, Grace Tatter, Tanya Raleigh, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Adam Waller, with help from Matt Hoisch, Alex Pena, and Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Me, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.